This week on Art on the Air, we interview Andrew Anderson and Ben Wedge, founders of Lakeside Artist Guild in Cedar Lake. Next, author and vintage fashion designer Sandy Young discusses her novel Divine Vintage, set in Michigan City. Our spotlight is with Tim King for LaPorte County Symphony Orchestra, discussing their April 23rd Film Fest concert featuring the music of John Williams.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Mary. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Mary and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself to art and show the world your heart.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. And like to welcome back to Art on the Air Spotlight someone who's been with us many times before, going to tell us about the upcoming events at the LaPorte County Symphony, Tim King, the Executive Director. Tim, always welcome back to Art on the Air Spotlight.
Aloha, Tim. It's so nice to see you.
Oh, thank you. It's great to see you guys, too. Thanks for the invitation. I really appreciate it.
Well, you got a lot of things happening, but the one that's exciting, especially maybe for younger audiences, and when I say younger, I'm saying, you know, under 60 maybe, who are fans.
Hopefully under 16.
Well, but I mean, you know, people in my generation will be excited about the things you have. So tell us about that upcoming concert, Film Fest.
Well, Carolyn Watson, our music director, has programmed, I think, just a wonderful concert for the final concert of our 49th season.
Wow.
Film Fest. With music from The Magnificent Seven, from Oscar Wilde, from Harry Potter, from Star Wars, from Spider-Man. And the majority of the concert really is a tribute to John Williams, who just recently turned 90 and is still composing full time with a pencil, by the way.
I know.
Composing with a pencil. And he's supposed to, supposedly he's booked 3 or 4 years out with movies. But I think what people will really get a kick out of this concert is we have a lot of extra things that are going on with this. We really, really want to make this a family-friendly concert. The doors open at 6 o'clock. The concert's at 7. And by the way, it's Saturday, April the 23rd at the Civic Auditorium in LaPorte. With the doors opening at 6, we're going to have an instrument petting zoo for the younger folks at the orchestra. And folks that don't know what an instrument petting zoo is, we're going to have a string person, a wind person, and a brass person from the orchestra. And Quinlan and Fabish is going to provide instruments for us. And the young ones are going to be able to try out an instrument. Maybe
so important.
Yeah, I think so. And so between 5th and 6th grade, I think, is when most schools try out their instruments. And so we really want to encourage the young ones to come in and try out an instrument from 6 to 6:45 at the rear of on the floor of the auditorium. And then on top of that, we're really encouraging people to dress in character costumes. If you're a Harry Potter fan or you've got your favorite Star Wars character, come on up, because I believe a lot of our orchestra members are going to do so. And Carolyn has threatened to do so as well. So I don't know what she's going to do. I've learned not to try to
I don't know. You might get a lot of lightsabers going off during the Star Wars.
I think
Wars.
You're probably right. In fact, one of the other things that we're doing is a magic baton competition, which we always have. We haven't done it in a couple of years.
The dueling mayors.
Tom Dermody and Dwayne Perry, Dermody from LaPorte and Perry from Michigan City, are going to vie against each other to see who can conduct the orchestra at the top of the second half. We got a really nice photo op with them with using the lightsabers as well. So, yes, I do expect lightsabers to be there, and that would be fine. In fact, the entire second half of the concert is going to be a Star Wars suite. So Star Wars fans, get ready. You're just going to be totally immersed in Star Wars music. And a lot of people don't realize that this music is difficult. John Williams does not write for grade one piano books. I mean, he writes difficult music, especially for the brass. But it always tends to be brass heavy, which is terribly exciting. So our musicians are definitely going to get a workout with this one.
Well, Tim, that's why at 90 years old, he's booked 4 years out.
And, you know, he's very humble, too, because I heard a quote of him. He says, "I'm just a guy with a pencil that writes notes."
Isn't that something? Well, I heard that he writes 2 minutes of music a day is how he does it.
Wow.
Very steady about that. And my good friend Bob Bernhardt, who's the principal pops conductor at Grand Rapids, is a good friend of Mr. Williams and has been to his house many times. And he's got photos of all these huge albums. And it's like the entire score to Raiders of the Lost Ark. And it's all in pencil, just page after page.
My gosh.
In pencil. But it's, as you all know, you know, between the Olympic things and the various movies, and the music is just, it's fantastic. It's inspirational. It's great, great music to hear. And I really hope people will come out. They can buy their tickets online at lcso.net. Or if you happen to live in LaPorte, they can go to Roxy Music or the Civic Auditorium. Tickets are $22 for adults, $20 for seniors, which are 60 and over. And students are admitted for free. We're one of the few orchestras in the country that admit students for free. So if you've got a family of five kids, the parents just have to pay for themselves and your kids get in for free. So this would be a really nice opportunity to hear the orchestra and have a nice evening out.
Oh, it sounds like a great evening and everything. And John Williams is a... I remember first encountering him, even pre-Jaws, on a movie called Cinderella Liberty. It's very interesting.
Oh, Cinderella. I know that movie. Yeah.
Yeah, Paul Williams actually wrote the one song in it, and then they had Toots Thielman, who played the harmonica. And it's like, and I think he was listed as Johnny Williams or something on the Reddit. Well, tell us what else you have going on there. Yeah, I think you have some things.
Well, we just had Hoosier Star auditions. Third weekend of March, and we have chosen 10 finalists. We don't have that out yet because we've just taken their photos. They've just had their song selections. But I really, truly do think we've got another great round of singers in the area. We have 24 different communities were represented in Hoosier Star auditions this year from Indiana. And our finalists hail from LaPorte, Michigan City, Chesterton, Crown Point, Fort Wayne, and Terre Haute, Indiana.
Wow.
So it truly is going to Who's your star of this time?
Tim, do you have time to talk about the New Generations program? I think that's...
Yes. New Generations is basically three different aspects. It's our education conference that we present every October, which we encourage teachers to sign up for. It's our student apprentice program, which talented music students in their instruments get a chance to become a member of the orchestra for 1 year. And then the third arm is our collaboration with Drew's Gift, which we encourage people to donate any instrument. We don't care how good or bad it is because they can fix it. So far in LaPorte County alone, we've donated 115 instruments to this program in the past 18 months. And they are given to at least to students who cannot afford or purchase an instrument. And that's
brilliant.
That's an ongoing process.
Well, Tim, we appreciate you coming in Art in the Air Spotlight, sharing about Film Fest. And it's coming up April 23rd, 7 p.m., LaPorte County Symphony Orchestra. Tim, thank you so much for sharing on Art on the
Air. Thank you. Thank you both.
Thank you, Tim.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. This is Pledge Week for your public radio station. And Art on the Air encourages our loyal listeners to support this station by making a monthly sustaining pledge so we may continue to bring you this great program. what you just heard was the Grow Old With Me. That's from a group that we're going to have on right now. That was their arrangement, cellist Patricia White. And they formed this group to musicians that came together to serve the community because they were impacted by the pandemic, and they were all professional musicians. So they formed this group to address that and bring some things. They bring skills from all across the nation, Chicago, and their vision was to provide regular concerts in the region. Please welcome to Art in the Air, the Lakeside Artists Guild. We have Andrew Anderson and Benton Ben Wedge. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Welcome.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yes. Well, we always like our guests to tell us a little bit about their story, so we'll have each of you tell that a little briefly. So we'll go first with you, Andrew. Tell us how you got from where you were to where you are now.
I born and raised in Portland, Oregon. My father was a music teacher. He taught 5 grade schools, 2 middle schools, and a high school in the Clackamas District, a suburb of Portland. I grew up playing the cello from when I was 4 years old. My dad was a bass player with the Portland Opera and the Oregon Ballet. And so as I grew up hearing bass playing, and as soon as I was tall enough, I remember standing on phone books back when those things existed and playing on my dad's bass, and he saw me doing that, and so he started giving me a couple lessons, and I switched to the double bass, and I haven't looked back. I've been playing the bass since I was 13 years old, and I'm 44 now, so that's a good long time. I went to school. Well, I met my wife. We got married while I was going to a community college, Mount Hood Community College, great jazz program there. I went to Aspen in 97, the Aspen Music Festival, played in the top orchestra there, and started thinking maybe I was going to try to pursue music for a career. I met my teacher there, Stuart Sankey, and I went and studied with him at the University of Michigan. I should say, I studied with my, you can't really take lessons from your father. It doesn't work. So I studied with his stand partner at the opera, Dr. Larry Zagantz. And then I went to University of Michigan, did my undergraduate studies there with Stuart Sankey. And then I went to Indiana University, and now I'm in the state I now reside in, and got my master's. And then I started a doctorate at University of North Texas with Jeff Braticich. I was a doctoral teaching fellow there. I had 10 jazz players who had to play a concerto on the upright bass. They were terrified. And I walked them through it and got them to be able to pass that requirement. And then I won an audition. First for the Grant Park Orchestra, where I've played since 2003, and then second for the Lyric Opera of Chicago, where I've performed since 2004.
Excellent. So, Ben, tell us a little about your journey.
I grew up in Kansas and started playing an orchestra, just really randomly chose the viola. I just had a friend, an older friend that I thought was cool. And so I had to pick an instrument. I thought, well, if he's cool, the viola must be cool. Little did I know, it's apparently not the coolest of the instruments, but I've grown to love it. And I love the function that it has. I really by chance, I ended up at Northwestern University. I had an interest in kind of an equal interest in music and physics and engineering. And I thought I'd heard that was a good school for both. So I decided to go there, really not knowing that much about it at the time. And it just so happened I had a great music teacher, and music was a lot more fun than calculus. So I decided, why don't I just run with that? And so I've been doing that ever since. So a lot of it was, I come from a musical family and always loved music. So it's something that came naturally. And then through the years, I've been more or less a freelancer, but playing with almost all the groups. Like if there's a group in Chicago, you name it, I've probably played with them. And started to get in, through college and through the years, started getting more into writing music, because there would just be these scenarios where there really wasn't the right music for the right event. And so I just said, well, this is a few years back before you could find a million things on the internet. So I was just writing music, pop songs and arrangements, and people really started to love them and kind of request them. So and especially the audiences would respond to them. So that's become a sideline of mine as well. Besides the playing, I do a lot of writing and composing. And I guess, how I ended up in Indiana over the last few years, my wife and I had been probably trying to get away from the Chicago. There's some downsides and upsides to living in the city. And we were really ready to take a look at Indiana. And right during the pandemic, when I was the busiest I've ever been, the bottom fell out of my career. And but, you know, the plus side to that is I had some time. So we came down and looked around and finally found where we wanted to live. And you know, Andy had been down here for a few more years, and we just came together and really said, let's recreate, or let's plant a seed artistically here. You know, I'm not that fond of driving up to Dan Ryan to go to gigs in Chicago anyway. So let's see what we can do artistically in this area. We know there's a lot of people who would love to come hear us, and there's, I would say they're a little underserved. So let's bring something here and plant a seed.
Yeah. I thought about this a lot because we spend all our career, at least I have at least half of my career, driving from this area over into Chicago, and all the audience is driving right along with me into Chicago to get the art. And I was thinking, oh man. And so then the pandemic happened and everything stopped. Like nothing was happening in Chicago, but I'd go to these farmers markets around Indiana and they were one of the first things to reopen. My kids and I were out and we'd be improvising on hymns, and people were incredibly generous and they loved it. And I thought, wow, this is a new way of making music. And I got to, you know, the longer the pandemic lasted, the sadder I got. Eventually, one of my buddies who's now on our board of directors was saying, gosh, why don't you stop whining and get off your butt and do something? And so I did. And September 11th of 2020, September 10th of 2020, I sent in our request to the state of Indiana to become a nonprofit. And the very next day they approved it. And I was like, wait a minute, this is supposed to be really hard. I was expecting months and months of waiting. They flipped it around the next day. And I'm like, oh no, now I got to do this. And so then I had contacted Ben and a bunch of Pat White and Tammy Ringus and Chels Leibniz and a bunch of other musicians who I knew in the area, who I knew as teachers. And some of them I had performed with, like Ben, I performed with all sorts of amazing groups in Chicago with, and invited them to my backyard. And we read through some stuff and I explained kind of what we were thinking, and they were all on board with it because we were going through a musical drought. And none of the institutions that already were established were actually moving. They were still laying fallow.
And there were no signs of life.
Yeah. And so it started to get really scary. And so it was like, okay, well, if nobody's going to do something, I guess it's me.
And so what were those first things that you did after that initial meeting? So what was your next step?
We really quick, January 26th, 2020. Not January, excuse me. September 26th of 2020. Less than like roughly 2 weeks from our founding, we put on a free public concert at the town grounds in Cedar Lake, right by the Lighthouse restaurant there. Amazing venue. And I was sitting there, you know, I've done Ravinia and I've played Grant Park for all these years. They don't have this beautiful lake behind their stage. I mean, it's an amazing venue. And I was thinking, oh, this could really grow into something. We could turn the tide. And instead of people driving to Chicago to have an amazing artistic experience, maybe we're going to get people from Chicago driving out to Cedar Lake, Indiana to have this amazing experience. And I that's my goal. Ever since that first concert, we saw that the crowd came. They were incredibly generous. I was able to pay our musicians. I thought, wow, this could really turn into something.
You know, and so when you go to your website, the logo is gorgeous. The whole look of it is gorgeous. And to hear how fast everything came together, was that also in the package or, you know, your whole look?
We put it together with our individual talents and a lot of help from friends and family. So our
A lot of talent.
Our cellist, Patricia White, her brother was
Rick Natanek,
graphic designer. Yeah.
Tobio Designs, and he came up with our logo pro bono, just said, hey, I'll help out, and he came up with many of our first posters. By the end of that first year, we had something like 25 different posters for different shows we had produced, and they all had these really eclectic playbills. The artistic design for them was unique and interesting. I thought, wow, this is, and it all came about kind of organically.
We look high budget on a little book.
Yeah, we're on a shoestring.
Okay, so the impetus of coming together was to have, you know, all of you are professional musicians and the pandemic was devastating to the arts. But now it's grown. The Academy is so exciting. So again, I'm going to drive out to Cedar Lake myself to participate. I'm just so excited by your organization. So
it's
the Academy.
It's
part of the reason when I moved here too, is just thinking about how can we have our children involved in a kind of a seamless transition, just multi-generational creation of art and cultivation of art. And it was just the natural thing to do. And what makes it so vibrant is that we're encouraging them to be creative and not just, you know, recreating the notes, but creating the music, their writing. We have composition classes for kind of a younger age than you would expect. And I think they're all the most excited about that class, which is weird because I teach it and I don't really know what I'm talking about, but I sort of let them lead the discussion wherever they want to go. And they're, you know, when that kind of young energy is unleashed, you just ride the wave with it. And it's been really fun. They're, you know, we're really big on locally sourcing kind of the culture. It's, you know, I think when I was younger, it just, we were fed culture through the TV and the radio, and we're trying to avoid that and seeing, you know, what would happen. Oh, there goes our lights. What would happen if we were cut off from external influences? What would these children create of their own? And so that's my guiding principle. We can't perfectly do it, but we can encourage any ideas that are bubbling up through them. And so we have this one student, for instance, she bought a hammered dulcimer. And we're like, well, we need to put that on our concert because, you know, how can we do this? Well, she made her own arrangement, orchestrated it. We put it on for the public. It was just gorgeous.
It's so exciting. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds brilliant.
It was amazing. It was one of those experiences. So we're not just, you know, like a museum recreating the art. Like we're involved in.
We're doing both. Yeah. We're preserving the traditional art. And then we're also trying to encourage them to not think that composition is only for dead people, because it isn't. You know, we've got to be. I want them to be the next J.S. Bach and take music to the next place it needs to go, for the survival of the art forms that I love. I would love it if one of our students eventually was writing opera, because I grew to love and cherish the full art form of opera. I think it's the king of all art forms, and my dream is to someday have the financial means and the support to start producing opera here in Northwest Indiana on a scale that would rival anywhere, and any art form, dance.
I'm on board. I'll help you with that.
We're trying to include things and grow and become a real strength in the region for an incredibly wide diversity of art forms. We do a lot of improvisation. We do a lot of fiddle music. My goal is when someone comes to our concert, and they might be the type of person who would never set foot in a concert hall to hear an orchestra, but I want them to come away thinking, wow, I didn't know I loved that. You know, some of the people who the fine art community might have told, this isn't for you because you don't wear a white collar to work, or maybe you've got thick soles on your boots when you work, you know, maybe those people are going to be just as much a fan of this if you present it to them as if it was for them. And it is. And, you know, Ben and I both enjoy getting dirty when we work, and we can relate to that. And so that's one of the reasons we moved to this area, is because it's a fertile ground for people who might never have been exposed to this music, might never have heard it. And I think they're going to love it, especially when we bring it to them right alongside their favorite songs in pop culture and contemporary music that they do love. And they might be shocked to hear on these arcane, antiquated instruments that still have a living voice and still can express some of these ideas that you hear in modern music. And we can do it without the electricity. It's amazing.
Well, yeah. And speaking of amazing, we want to hear some one of your pieces that you've done. It's on your album, which actually is available, the Art of the Hymn album. And it's Amazing Grace. Briefly talk about that. Let's take a listen to it.
One of our first meetings together was to try to find, you know, one of the first things we had to really work on was finding a place to rehearse. We couldn't rehearse in the backyard because things start getting cold and mosquitoes and everything. So we found a little country church in the area that we thought would be a great place to rehearse. And we went in there and talked to the pastor's son. Well, it turns out we were just kindred spirits. He wanted us to rehearse there. And not only did he want us to rehearse there, they wanted to collaborate. And so that was the funding one of the first projects that was funded was came from the generosity of that church. And they wanted to, really what it is a combination of our classical roots with this tradition, this American and you know,
folk tradition
of hymns, and seeing how can we meld those ideas, you know, sort of in the way that Bach would take the hymn tunes of his day, dress it up and to something so elaborate.
Let's take a listen to it. Here is Amazing Grace, the Art of the Hymn album, Lakeside Artist Guild. That was Amazing Grace, the Art of the Hymn album, Lakeside Artist Guild.
Just gorgeous.
Yes, beautiful. So we just have a few minutes left. Tell us what you have coming up like this year, latter part of April, May, into the summer.
Well, so far this year, we've already done 12 unique performances, many different shows, different styles. And upcoming May the 4th be with you. On May the 4th, of course.
Of course.
Is going to be at the Design Barn in Hebron, which is a new up-and-coming kind of very unique and eclectic country place to hear music. It's kind of urban crossover. Very, very interesting. And we're doing, it'll be a collection of music from Star Wars, John Williams, movie music. And then also we're going to have May the 13th is going to be our...
It's a concert. We're calling it A Whole Lot of Nacht Music, which is at the Anderson Winery. So it's Bordin, Nocturne, Mozart are kind of the features, but we're going to do some beautiful jazz and pop versions of music about the night, music of the night.
Yeah, if you can think of a song that has those words, something about the evening or the night, it's probably going to be on that program.
We're running out of And then May 21st is going to be a special concert at Faith Bible Church in Creston, and that's one where we'll be playing we'll be playing some numbers from the Art of the Hymn, including Amazing Grace.
And that one has been funded by a patron who is celebrating a wedding anniversary, and so they said, we want to fund a concert and invite the public to come.
That's free.
And so it's free to the public. So if you're thinking, oh, I don't know if I want to go out to hear a group I'm not that familiar with, this is the perfect chance for you to come and hear us, because somebody else paid the bill. And then June 10th, we're going to be back at Anderson Winery. We have a running second Friday of the month series at Anderson's Winery. They've been gracious enough to host us. Our last one was a Beatles show. And so this next one's going to be Mike Green, who's a local artist, and we're collaborating with him to kind of add our sound to his music.
Quickly tell us your website and how they can find out about you.
LakesideArtistsGuild.com.
And that's Lakeside Artists Guild. We appreciate them coming on Art of the Year. That's Andrew Anderson and Ben Wedge with the Lakeside Artists Guild in Cedar Lake. Thank you so much for coming on Art on the Air.
Thank you.
So exciting. Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
Hope to see you.
Yeah.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. This is Pledge Week for your public radio station, and Art on the Air encourages our loyal listeners to support this station by making a monthly sustaining pledge, so we may continue to bring you this great program.
We are pleased to welcome Sandra L. Young to Art on the Air. Sandy is an author, singer, actor, and vintage fashion lover. Her debut book titled Divine Vintage is set in Michigan City, Indiana, specifically in the Uptown Arts District, and encompasses several of her passions. Offstage, Sandy is currently board president of Arts in the Park in LaPorte, Indiana. On stage again, she sings with Blue Sky Music Trio and the First United Methodist Praise Band. Aloha, Sandy. Thank you for joining Larry and I on Art on the Air.
Oh, I'm so excited to join you two today. Thank you.
Well, Sandy, we like to start off our show by kind of finding out all about you. So I like to say how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us about yourself.
I grew up in Central Illinois, and books were really my passion, reading, because I was surrounded by corn and bean fields. So it really exposed me to the world. And so I read a lot, and I just loved words. And as I grew older, I would write and, little short stories and things like that. And eventually, even after college, I was writing. I was a journalism communications major at Eastern Illinois University. And I moved out to become a journalist at newspapers. And I found that I really enjoyed the feature writing. And eventually, though, I got into community theater. And Larry, you know how community theater can take you over. Well, instead of writing, I started to do a lot of shows, like especially when I moved to Indiana, which was about 32 years ago. And I was doing about 5 shows a year. So I didn't have a lot of time to write, and that just really consumed me for a long time. But the vintage clothing, the costuming from the shows was really so appealing to me, and I started to collect little bits and pieces. That's when you could get it cheap. You know, people would go to an auction. I could get a box lot for $1, and I'd walk away with great things. So I was really excited to start that collecting hobby. And meanwhile, though, the writing just waited until just a few years ago, I started writing again, and I had such a passion for it that I retired. I was vice president of the Unity Foundation of LaPorte County. I'd also been the executive director of Healthy Communities of LaPorte County and Drug Free Partnership for 11 years prior. So I just had this real desire to pursue the writing, and fortunately, just a a few years later, here I am. I have landed a small traditional press publishing deal, and Divine Vintage released February 21st.
I'd like to go back to your theater career a little bit. Tell us about some of the shows you were in, some of the roles you played, and some of the groups you were with.
I really did pieces throughout the region, and some of my early things when I moved were with Crown Point. Lake of the Four Seasons. I did theater when that group was out there, and I also did quite a bit with what was Community Theater Guild for many years, and now that's Chicago Street Theater. Yeah. And one of my most exciting theater memories really was taking the Elephant Man to state competition. I played Mrs. Kendall, the British actress, and we won state competition. Now, unfortunately, it didn't move on to an international level that year. Every other year, you get to go international. But, we won with that show. And I've done a lot of theater then, more this direction with Chesterton and LaPorte and Michigan City, Footlight, Dunes, and all kinds of places. Noises Off was a favorite, getting yes. down that comedic timing and physical timing at LaPorte Little Theater. And the last show I did was Spinning into Butter. And that is a real relevant social commentary with a small college with a racial incident. And I really had to stretch to play a character who was not at all empathetic. But it was a great challenge.
Sandy, are you proficient at accents? Did you do that one with a British accent, or?
I did a British accent, absolutely, and I created an accent too for Spinning into Butter. It was at East Coast College, and I just came out with an accent. And thankfully, the director was like, "Oh, I really like that." And she came from casting up at Goodman previously. So, she was a really good director. I thought, well, good. If I'm impressing her, then, I'm doing what I need to be doing on stage. So I do enjoy accents, and I've done them a few times, yes.
Musical roles versus a straight plays. Do you have any favorite roles? And because you obviously sing, so you've probably done musicals. So
I have done musicals. It's interesting, Larry, because for many years I was such a shy singer and I didn't have that confidence to really breathe behind it. So I wasn't coming out and doing solo work. And then, maybe 12 years ago, I got the boldness. I sang with Mary Kay Steele. You may know her.
Oh, I know her.
Wonderful singer and actress in the region, and was learning and gaining confidence. And I joined a rock pop band. And so I was singing with that. And as my confidence grew, the singing began to overshadow the theater. I was doing a lot more singing and loving it. And so musicals, I've done quite a few, but I've never done a musical lead because at that time I was too nervous to try to do that. nowadays I'm like, well, yeah, I could do that. But then it was more straight plays. I've done more straight plays than musicals.
Any role you'd like to play that you haven't played?
Oh, I would have liked to have done Blanche DuBois in Streetcar, but I think I've probably passed the age for that. You get to a point where it's like, whoops, I missed out on that one.
In any of these productions, have you used your own wardrobe?
I definitely have. I have used my own wardrobe. We did The Women at LaPorte Little Theater for one thing, and that was set back like in the time when women would have to go out to Reno and get a divorce. And so I had some of my own great costumes. So a lot of times I will. And then I've done, as you know, Esther, a lot of small repertory kind of productions with Dan Schaaf locally. He does some really quirky, fun things. And I will wear my own costume.
Wonderful.
So I've kind of pared down my vintage to what I can wear and use now compared to at one time having all kinds of, sizes.
Excited to talk about the book. And you talked about you picked up writing again a few years ago. Was that with a group? Did you do it on your own? What kind of support did you have?
At the time, it really was just me sitting down and loving the writing. These stories were coming out with this vintage clothing tie. I wrote three linked novellas. And Catherine Lanigan, who is LaPorte-based again, she grew up here, author. She's had 45 published books. And she had held a workshop in Chesterton. And I went and she looked at some of Divine Vintage and said, you should turn that into a full novel. So I felt empowered to try that. And over the years, I'd work on it. I'd improve my writing because we can all get better. And so I was studying and taking webinars, but I didn't really find a local writer's tribe so much. And now at this time, I have an international group of, you know, writer friends who are both debuts. There's hundreds of people who are writing traditionally published debuts like me and others who are self-publishing that are coming out. We all support each other. And the press I'm with, there's a group of us that support each other. So I have a tribe that way. And it's interesting. And you need to have that support.
Do theater groups use your costumes? Do you loan those out or rent them out to groups if they have things? Do they say, hey, do you have some Sandys for da-da-da-da-da? And do you do that?
I've never had anybody borrow them or rent them at this point. I've probably been a little low-key with having it. And most of the theaters, of course, have a lot of a stock of their own, and they trade between each other. So I did offer one time to one group that was interested in it. At this point, it's just kind of my own. You have to be cautious with trusting people because, as Esther was noting about an earlier piece she owns, it can be fragile and you'd hate to have it ripped up in some way.
And there's also the sizing problem. You know, you might loan out a piece that goes to either size and they decide to modify it, you know, themselves without checking in, like, oh, hey, we'll take that in. And yeah, I know how that is.
And it's very small. Most vintage clothing is pretty tiny. You know, when you get the older pieces, it's like I can barely fit into them sometimes.
So tell us the premise of your novel. You give us the premise and tell us a little bit about the storyline, you know, without giving away any of the things. But it is set in Michigan City, but just tell us a little bit about it.
Yes, Divine Vintage features Tess Burton, and she has risked her inheritance to move to Michigan City to open the Divine Vintage Boutique in the Uptown Arts District. And she's asked to model an Edwardian trousseau gown, and when she wears it, she visions back to the past 100 years ago to see a crime of passion. But she sees it differently than local history. So she has to convince the handsome descendant of the accused husband to try to delve back into the past using vintage clothing as a catalyst and the women's diary entries. They see various suspects arise in the murder and their own romance is growing, but they discover that romance was just as thorny in 1913 and that those past emotions may actually be influencing their own relationship and derail it.
So I have to say that Tessa's shop reminds me a lot of Julia Nielsen's closet. Was that sort of an inspiration for you as well?
Julia's closet did not exist when I wrote this book. It is my book was written prior, and I do know Julia. She's got a lovely shop. I've sold her some great pieces over the years. When I had to downsize, I've connected with her, and so she's sold some of my clothing in there. But no, I actually predates, and people have asked me, is the mansion Carver House, is it Barker Mansion? Well, initially that was my thought, and I thought, ooh, I don't know if the Barker family would like having a murder in the house. It's not set on Barker, but it was an inspiration. And then I discovered through friends who know the Barker family and new staff who's working at Barker Mansion, they said they would love it, you know, claim it. And I was like, okay, if they don't mind. In fact, I'm going to be speaking there in July. They've got me set up to come in and do a presentation. I'm presenting a lot coming up. People in the area have been so supportive of the book, and I've loved it.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
Do you have a follow-up book come in the make or in your mind or a sequel to that one or something completely different?
I am working feverishly on a sequel because the people who have read it have been saying, I want more. They literally, I have been so overwhelmed and thrilled by the response for this little book because I've not only had people I don't know on Goodreads, Amazon, BookBub put up, you know, dozens and dozens of reviews saying, wonderful things. But people I know and acquaintances who see me say, oh, I've read your book. I love your book. And it just makes me so happy. And a lot of them are saying, you know, where's the sequel? Well, thankfully, I had a sequel that needs a lot of work, but I am working on it as fast as possible. And it features Tessa's shop assistant, and it has a LaPorte Little Theater plotline.
Wow.
With a ghost, of course, and mystery and romance. So I'm following the same formula since people seem to like it.
That's wonderful.
So is there any theater in your future? I mean, have you retired from that, or are you just looking for the right role?
I probably would still be open to it, definitely. At this point, I work so hard on the book, for one thing. We have to brand and market ourselves as authors. Even those with big five publishers nowadays, you have to be really out there. So I spend a lot of time building that connection to readers. And now I'm setting up, as I said, a lot of presentations and book clubs. I would love to be in anybody's local book club. If they're close by, I could drive there. I've got several set up already. Otherwise, I could even Zoom anywhere in the country. So at this point, I feel like my focus needs to be on the book. I, in fact, was asked over the past couple of years, I had like five different groups reach out and say, we'd like you to do a role. We want you to audition. And I said, I can't. I really can't. I cannot divide myself up anymore, because the book needs to be the first priority. I really want to see it get as much traction in this world as I can with all the competition for books out there.
When is your next appearance? I know you've been doing several local book signings.
Actually, Barnes & Noble in Valparaiso is going to have a book fair, and they asked me about benefiting a local nonprofit, so I chose Arts in the Park for LaPorte because I have been the board president for quite some time. We do the free concert series, which is awesome, and we have poetry read every night when we're out there, and we have art displays. We've had author nights. Last year, I only had the promise of my book coming, and now I'll have the actual book. So, yes, that will be a great event where I'll be there meeting the public, signing books. They'll have copies available, and I really look forward to that. Hopefully running into some of my theater friends, Larry, from the region, like Piper Beccaresi.
Oh, yeah.
You may know her, great costumer, vintage
oh, sure.
friend. So she's read the book and she really adores it. And she's, you know, hoping to come out with other friends. So I think that will be a fun connection again of the theater community to my book and the vintage love.
So you sing with a group called Blue Sky Trio. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes. Blue Sky Music is myself and two gentlemen. And it's a really just a fun, easygoing group. We just played a private birthday party last week. We've done farmers markets and, different special events. We actually are giving away 90 minutes of music to Lubesnik Center's Art Bash for a fundraiser. We just like getting together and singing and harmonizing. And so we often just use karaoke tracks and just come in, and then two people jump up and they can sing with us if they want. We're going to be at LaPorte Yacht Club on the at the end of the month on the 23rd. So it's a good time. I love that we're singing, but we don't have to rehearse much. It's not a huge time commitment, but I'm still out there doing it with wonderful people that I enjoy.
Who are your partners in that?
Ted Taylor. He is a retired partner from the General Insurance Agency. And Jim Parks, who is a retired firefighter.
Wow, what a group. And tell us just a little bit about your tenure when you were the Unity Foundation, LaPorte County. So what does it do, and what did you do for it?
Unity Foundation is LaPorte's community foundation, as every county in Indiana has one of those set up by the Lilly Foundation. And what we did, of course, was to benefit our community with projects, with scholarships, with coalition building. It's just a great opportunity for collaborations. And as the vice president, I worked with President Maggie Spartz and had just such a wonderful time connecting with so many great folks and individuals and organizations in the community. And one of the things I really enjoyed was I chaired the Home Team Coalition, and it focused on homelessness. And I translated that, too, into my book. There's actually a subplot that has a homelessness theme. And that's because I really am a strong advocate for social justice, for fairness. And so I slid that into my book. Kind of all my favorite things ended up, you know, wrapped into Divine Vintage.
I don't know if you have the book in front of you, but do you want to do a short little reading?
I could do that if you'd like to hear.
Yeah.
Quick couple of pages here. I've done that at my launch parties. I had a couple of fun launch parties. I said I like to get people to a point where I leave them at a little cliffhanger. So I could do just a short couple of pages maybe here. And a good place to start is really from the beginning with Tess in her new shop. Tess Burton swept a handful of frothy fabric up to the mid-morning light that streamed through the shop's bay window. The flapper gown was perfect, with no moth holes or stains. Cradling the dress in both hands, she walked toward her new assistant. I let my heart rule and pushed my price limit when I bought this yesterday. Attending auctions and estate sales was a perk of her new adventure. On this sunny Tuesday in early May, they were prepping to offer Divine Vintage's finds to Michigan City, Indiana. Tessa's smile faded in recalling the responsibilities attached to a new business. A decades-old building, a very part-time employee, and a bank loan. Her fingers tightened on the dress. She'd taken a massive risk in opening the shop. If Divine Vintage failed, she'd lose her dream career along with her inheritance. She could end up a bag lady at 28, wandering the streets with a knockoff knapsack. She tried to shove back the insecurities as she reached the glass case that served as a central display and checkout counter. Don't panic. Focus on the positives. Well, you sure can't beat shopping in the name of business, she said, though she would have to avoid future splurges. One hand on a stack of beaded sweaters, Marcy Alexander paused. She straightened to a height of 6 feet, her slim yet curvy frame topped by a mass of curling auburn hair. Imagine a 1920s debutante floating down a staircase is such a showstopper. That dress is worth every cent. I totally agree. I can't resist a garment when its history speaks to me. Without a warning, Tess found herself submerged into a vision of the beaded aqua gown swishing around the calves of the first proud owner. An elusive tune played in her ears, followed by a burst of laughter. Her breathing sped up, as if she were dancing a foxtrot with a dashing partner. As she and the man twirled toward the center of the dance floor, an exotic fragrance wafted from the fabric of the dress. Tess clutched the dress to her chest and spun in a wide circle. The sounds and scent faded.
And that's from The Divine Vintage, and set in Michigan City. That's your debut novel, our guest, Sandy Young. So where can they find your book at?
It is in most major retailers, Amazon.com, of course, Barnes & Noble online. It's at Nook. It's Kobo, Ingram, Walmart.com. So you can find it a lot of places. And I said, I wrote Divine Vintage under Sandra L. Young. Generally, mm-hmm. I go by Sandy in the region, but went a little bit more formal with it. So folks can Google it, and they can find it a lot of places. And also on my website, I've got some links there, SandraYoungAuthor.com. I've got some pictures of my vintage clothing there if anybody wants to check it out and sign up for my newsletter.
Very good. And are you going to do this as a recorded book at some point? Because you just gave us a little sample. It sounds like that you'd be a great way to do that, as a book on tape, so to speak.
Possibly. I would definitely consider it. Audiobooks are very popular nowadays. So that's something that we authors toss around. My press does not hold the audiobook rights. I do. You know, some presses do, some don't. So I could do that. And I have had people say, again, doing theater for several years, I've done, you know, some radio stuff and all that. So I'm comfortable, but I would definitely want to warm up, you know, doing a cold read, you kind of like, oops, stumble a little bit. I'd have to find the right man to do the handsome descendant, you know, he'd have to have a sexy, compelling voice.
Very good. Well, we wish you luck with that. And that's Sandra L. Run, as otherwise known as Sandy. And that was her Divine Vintage book. She's also great in the Uptown's Arts District where it was set. We appreciate her. She's been in theater, has wonderful vintage wear. Sandy, thank you so much for being on Art on the Air.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Larry and Esther. I've just had so much fun today.
You've been listening to Art in the Air, and we'd like to thank our guests this week on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art in the Air is heard every Friday at 11 a.m. and rebroadcast Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP. Art in the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Thanks again to Greg Kovach, WVLP station manager, and Tom Maloney, vice president of radio operations for Lakeshore Public Radio. Our theme music is by Billy Foster, with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art in the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant and the National Endowment for the Arts. Underwriters for Art in the Air, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments, and Mary LeVan, Arts Patron. Art in the Air is always looking for financial support. We'd like to thank our current supporters. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, Esther and I especially would invite you to become an underwriter of this program in particular. We have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA. You can find out support information there. So don't just be an Art on the Air listener. Become a supporter or underwriter in whatever amount you're able to do so we continue to bring you this great content and this great local programming. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. And you'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know. Esther, I'm Larry, Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Mary and Esther, Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart.